Welcome to Minute 167 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. Once again, we're having this special week where we're having guests who have personal connections or personal information about the real escapes from Stalag Luft 3 from back in 1944. This is a fun week. We're gonna talk about things that we didn't talk about throughout the rest of this podcast. I'm Rob, and joining me today, once again, is Patty Flint, someone who has...
How we doing?
Doing great. So, as we mentioned yesterday, someone who is a relative, you could somewhat say distant or close, however you want to look at it, relative of Roger Bushell. He gave us some really interesting information about Roger yesterday, and hopefully today we'll have some more information about things connected to the real escape. So,
absolutely.
Minute 167 begins with Sedgwick being assured that he's actually in the right place, and goes all the way till we see Ramsey confirming the names on and off the list.
Yeah.
So, as we mentioned yesterday, Danny and Willie are on the boat. Somehow they've escaped, gotten away, and then we get Sedgwick, who walks along the through the forest with his French escort, and then meets up with a Spanish escort. So yesterday, Sedgwick asked the Spaniard, Spain? And today, we start off with him being told, España. So as we mentioned yesterday, you know, they just got an extra to say in a deep accent and make it sound as if he's foreign, you know, just throwing the word España. So... yeah, that's fun to see, especially knowing how great Coburn was at foreign accents. So this guy does a nice job, too.
Absolutely.
And then, basically, Cedric claps him on the back, and then they make their way towards wherever their destination is. We see the mountains in the distance. We see them going through towards the forest. The truth is, this is a great shot. Mm. That you know that it looks as if they took him on some location to be able to just take this very short scene, but it's a great shot because you can see the mountains in the distance. You see the trees. You know, there's the lush green, and then the field that they're walking through is a very bright yellowish brownish hue. And like I said, you see the mountains in the distance and the sky. I mean, the shot is just beautiful.
Yeah.
The way that we can see it. And they actually, the musical cues here are also great because it changes the music into a very, I guess you could say, a hopeful or jovial tone. Because now we see that it's someone who has made it out.
Yeah, it could even be a kind of victory song, couldn't it, really? It's very light, very, very positive, and you made it. Look at this beautiful place. You know, you're free. There's no more grey. There's no more camp, no more barbed wire. You've got this instead.
Right. Because, I mean, this is also the last point in the movie where we get to see the prisoners outside of them. You know, a little spoiler for everyone who's going to be listening the rest of this week and the beginning of next week when we finish this up. But when you look at it, I mean, we saw Danny and Willie get out by boat. He's getting out by foot. And that's it. I mean, these are the three guys who made their home runs. Yeah. As you discussed yesterday, there's some discrepancies between them and the real three guys that hit the home runs. But still, it's very Hollywoodish the way they do it here.
Yeah, like we said, it's on its own merits. You know, you look at this movie and you see these... you see these success stories, and I suppose it must be kind of, I don't know, it's not depressing as such, but it's a bit of a downer that the victorious moments in this movie, you know, the two main moments of joy and positivity and success are sort of crammed into this tiny little space and then back to reality. You know, it's almost like a segue into, you know, where it went wrong almost, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the original script, they split it up. They put Hiltz in this point. And I think Roger is also here. That first you have Danny and Willie escape, and then you have the scenes with Hiltz, and then you have the scenes with Roger getting caught. mm-hmm. or maybe it's vice versa. I'm trying to, I don't remember which one came first. And then you see Cedric or Merryvale in the original script, you know, when he gets out. So I guess they broke that up. But you're right. But on the other hand, it's nice to see. I mean, we just saw at the end of last week that they shot a whole bunch of them. And then immediately after that, we get to see the successes. So I think that was probably done more from a filmmaking perspective.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a known fact that Sturges had a lot of trouble selling this movie, you know, about an escape where no one gets out.
Yeah.
makes it a little difficult to sell. So maybe one of the conditions was that, okay, let's show the three guys who get out at the end of this, the information about every one of these various escape attempts and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the positive, negative, positive thing, you know, give them something good, hit them with the bad stuff, give them with something good again. They maybe not remember the bad stuff so much. It's kind of, we use it a lot in the military.
I don't know. I think this movie, they want you to remember the bad stuff here too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as unfortunate as it is, this was a big event. I mean, this is something that on both sides. I mean, this is something that reached Hitler on the one hand, and it also reached Churchill on the other hand. You know, this minor story about an escape attempt. You know, where 76 prisoners is theoretically not a lot based on the thousands that were incarcerated in POW camps.
Well, it was the biggest
escape, but still.
Well, and this is the thing, is there were literally dozens of escapes going on from camps. This is just one camp. There were dozens of escapes going on from all kinds of camps. And I think the Great Escape was the straw that sort of broke Hitler's back on his patience, because he'd said, well, you know, 100 Russians escaped from one last week, and a bunch of French guys escaped from one the week before. Now there's all this lot going on, and this is supposed to be from, you know, the apex camp, the escape proof camp, you know, which I think Roger
proved that it wasn't.
Well, as Jay said, I think it's a bold statement. You put all your eggs, putting all your eggs in one rotten basket, as you said, eggs in one basket. You just think to yourself, well, I know the idea behind it, because they genuinely thought that it was escape-proof, but nothing's really escape-proof for people that have got nothing else to do.
That's right. That's very true.
Yeah.
Right, so at this point, we then get another shot of the camp itself, where we see the gate opening up. We see all the prisoners inside the camp lined up. They must be standing at attention for something. I'm wondering if it was set up that as if they're standing at attention for the prisoners that are coming back.
Well, there was a thing called a PEL, which was you would have your morning inspection, you would have another one in the evening, things like that, and perhaps they had everyone out. The actual reality behind it was when Group Captain Massey, who was the senior British officer,
mm-hmm.
when he got the list, he went over and discussed it with a few heads of each room, and everyone went into the theater, and he walked up and said, there's a list, this has happened. The list was originally, I think, 27, 20 something like that, and then it just kept on rising and rising and rising until this number 50.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Because in reality, they were not all shot at once, like the way they do in the movie.
No. No, they were all taken various different places in groups of 2, 3, 4. You know, there were, I think, the most in one place was, I think, a dozen who were taken away somewhere else, but the vast majority of them were just 2 guys, 3, 4 guys, and it's, you know, from the main prisons where they were removed from, it must have felt like some sort of bizarre, you know, coin flip lottery going on, you know, when 2 people would be taken out but other prisoners were left there because of this list that had been created by Arthur Neave, you know, in the SF, or in the Gestapo. So,
was it random based on what you know?
Some of them were, but basically, after the arguments with Goering and everybody else, Hitler and his advisors had all said, look, because Hitler wanted them all shot, every last one of them. Everyone that gets captured, 73 of them, dead. I want them all gone. And then they said, well, look, that's gonna cause a lot of problems. 73 guys all being killed and none being injured? This could be difficult. So they eventually decided on 50, and the list was given to, I think, Arthur Neeb was the guy that, one of the section heads, was one of the last guys to get the list. And he was sat with their prisoner cards on a desk and would just put them, you know, too young, he's got family. But then he would see a name and say, this one's for it. Which I imagine as soon as they saw Roger's card, you know, his was already marked by the Gestapo back in Berlin after his last escape. So he was marked, and they'd already told him straight away. And von Lindeiner had warned them in the months previously that things were getting desperate and that they may end up not getting their time in the cooler, as everyone was expecting.
That's true. Right. No. So my question was, is that I know that there was a appeal in the morning and there was an appeal in the evening and stuff like that. The question is, you know, what are they trying to show in this particular scene? Because here we have, I think, 11 of the prisoners coming back.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it that they said, okay, everyone, we have 11 prisoners coming back. Let's stand at attention for them to give, you know, basically hats off.
I don't think so. I don't think it would have ended up like that, because
I'm talking about the movie. I'm not talking about the real life, obviously.
No. It's, I mean, it could be. It could be a sort of a welcome home, lads, kind of thing, where everyone was gathered up.
Especially since these guys were the lucky ones.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to sort of comprehend, because it wouldn't have been like that in the reality of it.
Right, obviously.
They would have welcoming parties, but I think they would more than likely be in the barracks, or they would take them into a block or something instead. Maybe it was a show of solidarity, maybe. Well done.
Right.
You gave it a shot. And then information gathering, I would imagine. You know,
yeah, for sure.
Did you see this guy? Did you see that guy? And I think they started that, a little bit of that, James Garner.
Right. Okay. Well. As what happens here, basically, is so the prisoners come in. You can clearly see James Garner is in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Nimmo is next to him. Also, those are the two characters that are recognizable. Then we have another 9 that we don't really know who they are. As they walk towards the compound, you see Ramsey leave, break rank, and walk over towards them. And then he basically said, Ramsey says to him, glad to see that you're all safe. Obviously, Henley, since Garner has top billing in this movie, is the one who gets to respond and says, thank you, sir. And then his next question is a very telling one, where he says, how many have been brought back? And the response is, you are the first group.
Yeah.
Nimmo's question is, well, do you know how many got away? And then what's interesting is while they're talking, we see Strachwitz walking behind them. You know, he's standing there somewhat stealthily. You know, he still has that yearbook stuck in his jacket. With the information about all the different prisoners. It's still sitting there. But I like the way that they just have him, you know, standing in the background.
Yeah.
And then we get a shot of Ramsey, and we can see Sarin behind him. We can see Goff, and we can see Griffith. You know, the three other guys who didn't make it out of the escape. They're actually the three guys, the next three in line that you know, should have been the ones out. So Ramsey, then Nimmo asks the question, do you know how many got away? And Ramsey says, not yet. And then Ramsey turns to Henley and says, well, what happened to Blythe? Which is a very telling question, because they, in the movie at least, they've gotten a list of the 50 already. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, is Blythe counted as part of the 50? Or is he number 51 from that perspective? I mean, it's never mentioned, the fact, because when they went through the list, we talked about that last week, the name of Blythe wasn't on that list. So, mm-hmm. I mean, as you mentioned, it makes more sense. You said that originally, you know, they got a list of 27, and then they got updates to the list, you know, now here's another 5, and here's another 10, and whatever. But the way that they deal with it here is interesting, because Blythe wasn't on the list, so theoretically, you would think that, that it's a, it would be 51, but I guess this goes back to the whole idea with, you know, with the how long the rope needed to be. There are little things that they just didn't pay attention to.
Well, I think another one is they had that when he says what happens to Blythe, and you see those eyes just drop and a little bit of sadness, and he comes straight back again. But you see the blood, the tunic and the shirt, and it's very visceral and real right there at that moment.
Because
there's still, you know, there's still his friend's blood on him at that point that he's being returned into this camp. So it's going to be very raw to him. It's going to be very, very emotive, you know?
Correct. No, you're 100% right. And basically, Henley's response to Ramsay is he says, well, he didn't make it, sir. Roger was right about that. And it's a great segue for Ramsay then to respond and say, well, I'm afraid Roger didn't make it either. At this point, Henley just looks on and he starts to make a realization. You know, you see the realization in Henley's face where he says it, and you see what? And he basically just looks at Ramsay and wants an answer, and Ramsay then says, well, I just posted the list. They shot 50. The Gestapo murdered them. And at this point, Henley is shocked even more, even though he realized that something had happened. And he goes, 50? And then he starts naming people. He goes, McDonnell, Ashley Pitt. And then Ramsay's response is, yes. And then one of the POWs, one of the no-name guys, says, Danny and Willie. And I like the added touch of that. Because, once again, they're giving us a little bit of hope here.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just going through a list of all the dead. They're still mentioning. I mean, obviously no one cares about Sedgwick because they haven't mentioned him.
He got on a bike. He was fine. He got
as I've mentioned many times, he also went off on his own. Everyone else went in jeeps. You know, I'm still, you know, the whole idea that I mean, Nimmo and Haynes went out together also, and they somehow got separated. I think that goes back with what you were saying about the fact that, you know, they just took random guys out of the room. So maybe the two of them were captured together, and they took Haynes out of that room, and or took Nimmo out of that room to let him out or whatever.
Yeah.
So I like that. And so, like I said, so the question is raised about Danny and Willie, and Ramsay's response is, nope, they're not on the list. And that pretty much, you know, is the way that this particular minute ends. I mean, tomorrow we'll continue with that list because there are a few other queries along the way here. So what else can you enlighten us about regarding this, the escape, regarding the investigation into the murder of the 50? Because since you're an expert on that.
Well, I know slightly more than some, but there are people who know a lot more than me. Well, the investigation...
So we should have them here.
So it was originally handed to a flight lieutenant, Frank McKenna, who was a police detective investigator in Blackpool in the UK. He joined up, and ironically, he knew two of the victims. So he had a lot to do to kind of keep himself separate from that, but still have that sense of justice that he needed to do to get there, you know, to get the job done. And basically, two of them, he had a look through the case files. This was just after Anthony Eden had said those responsible will be brought to exemplary justice, which is, you know, as he said in the House of Commons in the UK. So McKenna looked at this case file and he said, look, I'm going to investigate a job that's sort of 14, 15 months cold. Germany is basically a car park. You know, it's been leveled. Most of these people may be dead. Most of these people are more than likely in hiding or taken prisoner by somebody else. So how are we going to start this? And he went back to his boss and said, I don't think it can be done. And bosses, in their usual way, said, you are going to do it. So he jumped on a plane. It was him and a flight sergeant, Williams, jumped on a Dakota in sort of early September 1945, just after the war's finished, and started investigating. they just two of them on this plane. It turned out being a couple of dozen people investigating in the end, but they tore what was left of the country apart with some determination, you know, and they found a lot of the people that were involved, a lot. So I mean, there were rumors of, you know, 10,000 interviews and case files and things like that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of interviews, interrogations, questioning sessions. They found mistresses, they found associates, they found former employers, family members. They even sent a team to Moscow to interview one of the guys, and it was a dogged kind of thing. You know, the investigation officially finished, or the main part of the investigation finished in 1947-48, but they were still finding people later on. Wow. And it's still into the 60s. They were still doing some parts of investigation into it. So it was a big old thing, you know. A number of people went to the rope. The Nuremberg trials, you can actually see them. You can see photographs of them online. But he had a difficult job to do. But he took a team out and he went out and did it. He knocked on doors, old fashioned police work. Knocked on doors, and went to family members and visited places where they knew these guys hung out. It was a proper old school cop show, you know.
Wow. Wow. Tell me, have you ever seen the pseudo sequel to this movie, The Great Escape 2: The Untold Story?
I haven't. I've wanted to, but I've put myself off for it for a long, long time. I think I'm going to after doing the podcast and listening to the podcast. I think mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do it.
Okay, no, because that movie focuses much more on the investigation and what was done. I mean, they fictionalized it because, you know, they bring in an American detective to help out with it.
You know, of course they do.
Of course, of course.
Was he in jeans and a denim shirt? You know, did he?
No. But it was played by Judd Hirsch. Judd Hirsch played the.
All right. Okay.
If you're familiar with Judd Hirsch, so he played the American detective who is paired together with one of the escapees named the Artful Dodger
Major Johnny Dodge.
That's right, Major Johnny Dodge, who was played by Christopher Reeve.
Okay.
They gave you Superman here.
Well, let's see, you know.
And
it's not Richard Attenborough, but he's cool enough.
Right. I mean, was Dodge really a relative of Churchill?
Yes, okay. He was.
Right.
There was a very odd story about him as well. Now, I'm not sure whether it's true, but he was taken aside at one point in 44-45 at some point and said, we're going to repatriate you with your cousin Churchill, or your relative Churchill. But it was to try and start some sort of peace process.
Yes, exactly. The movie discusses that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
I don't know if it's true or not, but it was in the movie.
Yeah, it's in a number of books. It's in a number of books, but you know, I guess you had to be there, you know.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All right. So, do you have anything else?
Yeah, it's just a quick one, really. I wanted to talk a quick one about Massey, the senior British officer. Group Captain Massey was his name. He was repatriated to start the investigation off. The investigation wouldn't have happened without him. He complained to the Swiss, the protecting power at the time, and they formed a report. But until he got home, they didn't really have much in the way of anecdotal evidence about it. But due to a strange shortfall in the German bureaucracy, he was released early.
Because he was injured, right?
So before the escape, he'd actually put in papers to be repatriated back, or the Luftwaffe request from the camp. Let's get him back home. His leg injury is bad. We can't really treat him here. And, you know, let's face it, he's not really going to do much in the way of escaping. So and he's yeah.
So the one guy who can't escape, they're going to let out.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was more because it's a, you know, the Luftwaffe and the RAF were still gentlemen. That's the way it kind of worked. Right. But anyway. Right,
right. We mentioned that quite often here about the yeah. gentlemanly way that the Luftwaffe and the RAF treat oh, yeah. each other. Or at least yeah. when you're talking about Von Luger. You know, Von Luger yeah. and Strachwitz and you know, the way that, and Posen, the way that they, you know, the way they salute the entire time. You know, they still act like gentlemen. Which is something yeah. I've mentioned many times, that it's hard to hate the Germans in this movie.
Well, if I may, can I digress for one moment and tell you
of
about
of course, this? That's what we're doing.
I don't know whether you've heard about the duty pilot scheme. I don't know whether you've heard anything about that, but the duty pilot
scheme. I'm about to hear it.
It's, yeah, it was a security thing carried out by the Allies. What they would do is they would have some people around the camp, and you know, you see them sort of highlighted in the movies as the knock on a wall, tip your hat, you know, mm-hmm. smoke a cigarette with your left hand. One of these kind of things.
But move the garbage can top from one yeah. garbage bin to the other.
Lit up, lit down, yeah.
Yeah.
But the actual duty pilot is just a guy sat on a seat somewhere reading a newspaper. And he would log all of the camp staff coming in and out of the compound. So he would register what time they came in, who it was, where they went, how long they were in for, and when they left. Okay? Now, the Germans knew this was happening because it was very much this cat-and-mouse thing going on. And at one point, the intelligence officer, I think it was, or it might have even been the camp commandant himself, wandered into camp, into the compound, and he saw this duty pilot sat there, and he conspiratorially winked at him and said, "You can book me in now." So he knew it was going on. But then he said, "Are there any other of my men in the camp? Where are the rest of my men?" Because he was looking for these guys. The duty pilot said, "You're the only one in here, sir." Because they knew that this was going on. And rumor has it, I think I'm 95% sure on this, the commandant used the duty pilot to reprimand his own guys because they weren't on duty in the place they were supposed to be.
Okay. First of all, I love this story, and I'll tell you why. Because in the original script, they had that scene in there.
Yeah.
Where Von Luger walks up to Soren and asks him, and he sees that Soren has a chart, and he's listing his which men, and he says to him, "You can mark me down that I'm leaving yeah. or that I'm coming in," whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then he said to him, and I'd appreciate it if you can give me a copy of the list at the end of every day so that I can see what's going on with my men.
Yeah.
And that is one of the few cut scenes from the original script that really bothered me that they took
oh,
out.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it would have said so much about the cat and mouse game yeah. between them.
And very much it would have been that sort of moment of levity in a tricky situation. You know, there was a lot of things
yes.
going on, but it would have been fantastic. Anyway,
yeah, that, but was to my, hear, that was my... To hear from you... No, but to hear from you that is based on truth is,
oh, yeah.
is even more amazing to hear.
Yeah. The other one with Massey, as we were saying, is when he filled in the paperwork, the escape hadn't happened yet. So when he was told, you know, you'll be being repatriated, he thought, okay, the escape happened. He gathered all this information about it, and the Germans, thanks to their bureaucracy, still let him go. So he just walked out, you know, just like back to the UK, straight into high command. This is what happened. And the investigation would not have had so many starting points, you know. But yeah, the thing I found quite funny was Frank McKenna, when he first was flying over to Germany to start his investigation, he basically wrote his suspect list, and he wrote Hitler, Himmler, Goering, you know, the main guy. This was the start of his list. And then he went, right, Hitler's dead, scratch. You know, and that's what he did, you know. And this was his process of elimination. It was very simple. It was very to the point. And he just ran his way from top to bottom, you know. So there you go.
That's, wow. All right, anything else you want to tell us?
No, that's me.
All right. Well, it's been great having you on the show today and yesterday. You've enlightened me. Hopefully you've enlightened our listeners also. I'm assuming you have. It was great meeting you and being able to talk to you about these things.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And so you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you if they're interested.
Sure. There is a Great Escape Style Glove 3 Facebook group, of which I'm one of the admins. You can look for me if you've got any questions to ask. Yeah. And I'll be in Zargon every year, hopefully, if you want to meet me there.
All right, and get in touch with us by going to our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com, and our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Tomorrow we will have another person connected to the real escape, so that'll be fascinating. So please come back and listen to that. And until then, tally ho.
Tally ho.